Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the NWR Newscast's Game Club of Dragon Quest VIII, Journey of the Cursed King for 3DS. I'm here with Neil Ronahan.
Hi.
I'm Zach Miller, by the way, and Andy Gergen.
Hey, what's up?
And Nathan Mustafa.
Hey.
And today we're going to talk about where we left off last week was castle at Trodan Castle.
That was where we're getting to this week. So for it's some context with all this is we had really noble intentions of like doing this weekly. Then some life crap popped up. Then the Switch started coming out. A lot of things happened. So we're recording this second episode of our Dragon Quest VIII Game Club that we really aspired to do like once every other week at worst, like a month and a half after we started. So when we last left off, we just got out of the Abbey. Very early on, when you basically just assemble your full party, our initial goal then, and what we told you if you're playing along with us, which if you are, great, was to get to Trodan Castle. We're going to amend that. Maybe get a lot there farther. Hope you didn't stop playing because you were waiting for us to record the second episode. I feel real bad if you did stop playing and you're waiting for us to do the second episode. Like, send us some sort of listener mail, like email connectivity@nintendoreport.com, and just be like, one, just let us know that you're listening. That'd be cool. And also, like, we'll feel real bad if you were waiting for us and we let you down.
The third episode's goal is to beat the game.
Yeah, which,
well, I mean, we're targeting early 2018 for that.
Yeah. Yeah, about when Dragon Quest XI doesn't come to America on Switch and 3DS. That's what we're targeting to finish this. So Zach and Nathan, you have both finished the game at this point?
Correct.
Finished and done quite a bit of the post game stuff.
Yeah. What's your hour marker at this point, Zach?
Oh, I think it's like, oh God, I'd have to go get it, but it's somewhere in the range of 84 hours.
Damn. Wow. I think when I, cause I basically, I got to a point where I was cruising right along. I mean, you zoomed past me. Like you used your fast travel spell of Dragon Quest proportions and just blew past me. Like I was playing this game at a pretty steady clip. We were about pacing each other, and then you just like dropped 50 hours more than me into the game in the span of like a day and a half.
What are you sitting at?
I think I'm at about 25-30.
Okay.
And I'm just I think as we were talking before the show, Andy, you and I are both in Argonia, and I think I'm like maybe an hour or so ahead of you on that.
I'm at like 28 hours.
Yeah. I think I'm around there.
Okay.
What was yours, Nathan?
I think I beat the game. I can't remember, in around 45 or maybe 50. It didn't take that long.
It does. Yeah. From like I was when I got to the point that I was, I kind of poked ahead to just be like, all right, how far am I in? How deep am I into the game? And it seemed like beating the game in 50 hours was very reasonable, which I think is a stark difference from the PlayStation 2 version, which I think probably because of like random battles and other stuff was like a 70, 80 hour game minimum.
Well, and also the battles were faster on 3DS. They literally added a speed up option,
which is great. Mm-hmm.
Did the PS2 version have the option where you can basically have them fight for you?
Yes.
Yeah,
because I actually found that pretty helpful when I was starting to lose interest in the game a little bit, and I just wanted to like get to the next thing and save it. I was like, I don't want to do anything anymore. I just want to walk and save.
Did the AI do a good job? Because I don't trust AI with that kind of stuff.
I mean, I think actually the only character who can't die is Angelo because he's the only one who can bring anybody back. Right. And Angelo died very quickly, and then I think I lost Jessica too. And I ended up being okay, but it got a little scary for a minute.
So, I think the only reason I put 84 hours into it is because I put so much effort into finding and alchemizing things to make better gear and stuff, and I did all the photo stuff that I could. And
God, I finally just got a recipe for a better whip because I'm still on the Thorn Whip, which is garbage.
Yeah, it's not great.
I finally got a recipe for a better whip, and it requires one of the ingredients is another whip I still don't have.
I feel like
I'll show you this. Whips are awful.
They get better. No, the boomerang is like the wonderful thing that attacks everything. Whips just attack a certain enemy group.
Right.
I think you get a whip that attacks everyone. Okay. I went in hard with the whips with Jessica. So I'm too committed at this point.
The whips get good higher level.
Like, well, if you were to use the whips for Jessica, what weapon would you go with?
Stave.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's Stave. What I did.
He's a natural mage.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. She still has mage powers. It's just that then she also has a whip that she can use to attack.
You know, I got to the end of the game, and at that point, I was able to have two skills maxed for every character.
That's right. What I'm realizing. I think I have the hero maxed out on swords, maybe, or maybe I have Yangus maxed out. I have one of them maxed out, but now I'm starting to do another one just because I'm like, well, what else do I do?
After our last conversation, I started pointing both hero and Yangus full born onto fisticuffs.
Yeah.
So I have.
Yeah.
And until that point, I had split hero between staves and swords pretty equally. So he's all over the place at this point.
I'm all about that boomerang with the hero.
Yangus is almost
especially
all for me though.
If you guys need to level up fast, if you do want to, for whatever reason, you do actually return to the game and you want to push through, going outside the royal hunting grounds where you. Mm-hmm. Have to find that Argonian heart. There are a ridiculous amount of metal slimes.
Before when I was in that royal hunting ground part, which Andy, I don't even think you've gotten to yet.
No, I literally walked into Argonia and saved and quit.
Yeah, so shortly after you go to Argonia, you're going to be going to the royal hunting grounds. And I think I was playing the game on my lunch at work. Was eating my lunch and playing because you can do that with an RPG pretty easily. And I sat down and I got to the Royal Hunting Grounds, like 5 minutes was by these metal slimes and spent my entire lunch fighting metal slimes and went from I think it was like level 24 and then everybody was a level 30.
Yeah.
Boomerangs come in real handy.
Yeah.
That was
when my boomerang training had paid off. But that's one of the things that I kind of enjoy about Dragon Quest VIII on 3DS is that there are elements about it that just seem completely and totally broken in the translation. Because on the PlayStation 2, if you have random battles and you can't see enemies on the overworld, then those metal slimes are a lot harder to find.
Oh yeah.
But when you have all these enemies on the world map, you can just be like, "There's a metal slime. I'm gonna go get them." And like the metal slimes aren't really that hard to track down.
No, and because enemies despawn when you spin the camera, you can just keep spinning the camera until one spawns.
Yeah.
Now there's one place in the world after you get the ability to fly.
The godbird, right?
Yeah, the godbird. There is a little cliff right next to the Tower of Alexandria where there are nothing but slimes, including liquid metal slimes, and king metal slimes.
Ooh.
So I went up there and I activated the double bubble, which you only get one of, but it lasts 10 full fights. If you run away or the enemies run away, it doesn't count. So I leveled the F up there.
Yeah, because
another thing you can do, Zach, is there's a cliff, speaking of cliffs, by the Godbird's tower. Or their roost or whatever. Mm. During the day, it spawns a bunch of gold golems, and during the night, it spawns liquid metal slimes. So you run around, you grind gold during the day, keep running around, and grind XP at night, and that is a quick path to the end game.
I was reading a little bit, so I guess they're just kind of go over some. We can talk more specifically about story beats, but for I guess the kind of up to Argonia that we're talking about. You go through a couple towns, and then you get a ship, and then you can explore the sea. I was reading about how, I guess when you can get the ship, I think you can go to that area that you were describing, Zach. So people will do that, but it takes a very long time because you basically need to sail to the other side of the world.
There's a cliff there's a cliff where Zach was talking about, but in the southwest corner of the world, there's an island that spawns the same exact enemies that Zach was talking about.
Oh, okay.
And it's not marked on the map either.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I've been there.
I would say that the world feels much smaller now than it felt when I played this game a month ago. I have a little bit of context for what makes a big game world, I guess, is what.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I think we might be referencing Zelda slightly. Yeah, I actually kind of have to agree that like playing Dragon Quest VIII before Zelda Breath of the Wild was probably a good idea, because I think if I played it afterwards, I would be completely underwhelmed by the size of the world, because I remember even right after Myella Abbey going through Ascantha and just kind of being amazed by like how kind of nice this world looked.
Sure. Thing that it's interesting to me that this game probably back in 2004 kind of was Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
You know, it was so big at the time and free roaming.
And it was gorgeous. It was a visual showpiece.
Yeah.
And if you think about what it did for Dragon Quest at the time, I mean, Dragon Quest VII, especially in English, like that had a brutal localization. It kind of fell flat. At least from what I know, like Dragon Quest VII, I knew almost nothing about until the 3DS re-release. That came out very late in the PlayStation 1's life. Much like, I don't know, maybe Skyward Sword in the Wii's life. And then Dragon Quest VIII came out after, I think there was a 3 or 4 year gap.
Yeah.
And then it came out and kind of rocked people's worlds. And I mean, I've often heard Dragon Quest VIII heralded as one of the best RPGs on the PS2.
Yeah,
I still think it looks good. Easily. I mean, even on 3DS, it still looks fine.
Oh, yeah.
I would really like an up-res version re-released on PS4 just to have the music, because that's one thing that's really lacking in this version. The MIDI music, while it's pleasant and it's okay for a portable experience, I guess, It just doesn't hold up to the orchestrated soundtrack that they released in North America.
I'll totally agree with that. Like, I actually listened to some of the orchestrated music because I wanted the means in comparison, and I was just like, oh, I think I want that. The MIDI music isn't bad. It's just that it's almost like if you go through life not knowing about the orchestrated music, the MIDI music's fine. But then you hear that better life, and you want that life.
Right.
With the orchestrated music, I would find myself just staring at the screen just to enjoy the atmosphere. And that didn't happen in this version, but it was still really engaging. You know, it's a great game, and that holds up.
Sure.
So you guys are at, you're all past Trodane, obviously, but something I wanted to ask you about, and you all have boats too. How did you, I remember, and then I did not enjoy the fact that you have to go to that spirit world guy twice.
Is that guy a part of the bigger story of the game?
No.
King Pavin or whatever?
That is so weird. No,
the dude with the harp.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he never shows up again?
No, you go to that hill and you're like, hey, I'm here. Okay, I'll grant you a wish. And then like a few hours later, you're back there. I want a different wish granted.
Okay, I need a better harp then.
And then does he ever show back up?
Nope.
No. He's just a convenient plot mechanic number 3.
Right. Wow. And like what really killed me too was when I was in Trodane. Like finding his stupid door again, because you need to go at the right perfect time,
and it doesn't tell you that.
Yeah,
no,
yeah, that's what like I was there.
Kinda,
was like,
you kind of just have to remember.
Yeah, that was like this is where I went before. Why can't I just go in this way again?
Right.
I got lucky, I guess. I didn't have any issue with that door showing up again, but wow, yeah, that would suck.
I actually thought the Ascantha sequence was just kind of a big time sink because he just wants to see his wife's ghost or something.
I thought that was a nice like typical Dragon Quest vignette. Like
What's everybody's favorite vignette? I know we haven't all finished it and we might not remember all of them, but what's stuck with you so far?
I like the ruins, so to speak, of Trodane Castle. Going like exploring like the various bedrooms and seeing like basically everyone kind of frozen, seeing like the piano and whatnot in the princess's bedroom. Like that was pretty memorable.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I like the little shit in Argonia.
Yeah, the Argonia thing is great. I mean, that guy's a douche.
Yeah.
His whole storyline. And he gets it in the end. If Nathan probably knows, he kind of gets it.
Yeah, he does.
And then if you beat it a second time after you see that ending, if you go just beat what's his name again, you get a slightly different ending that puts a cap on it, even better.
Oh shoot!
After you beat the Dragon King, not oh shit.
Oh well, I'll watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
But no, I like Argonia the best, and I mean I didn't mind. I like the Ascantha stuff, even if it does feel pretty disconnected from the rest of the plot going on.
Yeah, I like. My favorite is the mole.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say
giant mole.
When you go back to Ascantha and then you have to go fight the moles, and like the moles just like playing the harp, hanging out.
I felt like that was straight out of Super Mario RPG.
Yeah, like that was like we were going to Moleville. That was I forget the name of the boss that you fight there.
He's the bomb guy.
Yeah.
I feel like it might have been offensive.
Probably. But yeah, I mean I did like the I need to look up this boss's name. So can
well,
carry
while
on.
I was looking that up, I'm gonna cheat and say that my favorite vignette in this was not a vignette. It's the parallel story, the love story between the hero and the princess.
Oh yeah,
that kind of runs in parallel to the main story. I like that because most Dragon Quests don't have that strong, consistent narrative. I like that you're on a quest. You have characters there that consistently remind you of why you're doing what you're doing. And that there's some interest that kind of elevates the hero beyond, even though he is just a silent protagonist. It feels like in most games, you're not nothing but, you know, the chosen one. And this, you feel like you're an actual person in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't seen any of that. I mean, I haven't seen any of that romance story you're talking about.
Have you taken Medea to the magical water place?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that was earlier in the game.
Minor spoilers. I mean, they constantly reference that the princess has been turned into a horse, so everyone knows that by now. So you go to a spring, and she's temporarily able to transform back into her human form. If you actually expect that to be the end of the game, I think you're fooling yourself. But it's not the end of the game. It doesn't solve the curse all the way. But after that point, you have these kind of dream sequences where she's able to speak with you and kind of recount elements of the story and give
your time together
and kind of give her thoughts on the proceedings of the game. And it's kind of a nice,
that's awesome
summary of things as you move along. And I just really liked it.
Yeah, sounds compelling.
And you can take her back to the spring, and she'll give you different dialogue if you let her drink the water again.
That's true.
So the character in that that area of Super Mario RPG is named Punchinello.
Right.
And apparently the translator originally wanted to name him James Bomb.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
I'm glad they didn't.
but anyway, I need to get back to this game at some point.
Yeah, that's good. I thought getting the ship was a little too involved.
Yeah, like that. Like it was just like, guys, it's right there. Like what the hell?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, can't there be an easier way?
Once you're on the ship, they don't have sea battles that where the monsters show up on the field. Then it turns back into random encounters, just like the older version of the game. And I just couldn't stand it.
Yeah. No. It was like. I never played much of the PS2 version. I don't think I'd really like the PS2 version that much. I mean, even more so after playing the 3DS version. But I think if I play the PS2 version in a world where I did not play the 3DS version, I think I'd be frustrated by a lot of how the game was structured.
I remember being frustrated by that game.
I had a lot of false starts with the PS2 version and just never made it through. It wasn't portable. There were still the random encounters and a lot of inefficiencies with the alchemy system. Which they really improved. And this is a great version to actually play through.
I think what really threw me for a loop after I got the boat was that I don't remember feeling like I had any idea where to go.
Yeah, so I just kind of go to the Western continent, I think is the only direction that you're given.
If I was supposed to end up at Baccarat, then I did so by sheer luck.
Yeah.
Maybe there's literally nowhere else you can actually get to, but I sailed until I found something that looked interesting, and then I sailed until I found a place to land there, and then I walked for a really long time, because I think I got off on the wrong side of, like, a river or something.
You got off by the church or something?
Yeah,
I don't know, but either way, like, I walked for a super long time, and then I got to Baccarat, and I was like, well, here's a town. It's better than... Maybe they'll sell me a new whip here, and they didn't.
Well, I really like selling the whip for lottery coins later on.
You missed the store. Like, because you're talking about, like, not being able, like, I upgraded that. I think I've upgraded that whip twice.
I've checked every store that I've come across.
I seem to recall the thorn. You stuck with the thorn whip for a really long time.
Yeah. No, there was totally a long time. But, like, mm-hmm. I mean, we're about the same spot. I've gotten two whips since the thorn whip.
I wish I knew how to get a new whip, because Jessica does like 4 damage to everything she attacks.
I do love that moment.
I think whips are awful.
I like them.
I mean, I just cast boom every time until she runs out of MP, and then I go find an inn. So it works. It's about the end of the world.
I do love the boost that you get whenever you get like a big new weapon, because then it'll be like, all right, now Yangus is a total powerhouse, or you know, this new bow for Angelo, he's going to kick some ass.
I love when some random, like, golem is too love-struck by my mage to attack.
That happens more and more as you increase that stat.
Yeah.
That's true. Speaking of the combat, do you mind if we touch on that for a little bit?
Go ahead.
As you go further along, I mentioned that you can basically max out a couple of the skill trees. I really like in this game how it's not a class system per se. It's tied to what weapon you have equipped, what abilities you can use that you've been unlocking. And since you can equip and remove equipment as needed in battle, it basically lets you switch classes just in the middle of battle as you see fit, which is really awesome.
I didn't realize you can do that.
Yeah, that took me a while before I realized that was even an option. It was because I would usually just have whatever I would have, like, the one kind of weapon that I had and then sell the other one. But then I think it was around when I got the Holy Lance. That's when, like, I was like, okay, I'm going boomerang for the hero, but this Lance is really good. I should use it right now. Mm. And then I noticed that I could switch to the boomerang mid battle. And I was like, Oh, that's really cool.
Huh. Yeah. It's helpful because sometimes say you want to clear out a bunch of the, I guess, lower level enemies with abilities like thin air, but then maybe you want to switch to something, you know, like the axe, where you have more powerful single enemy abilities. You can do that.
Thin air is incredible, by the way.
I think that adds a lot of depth to the combat. In addition to that, the tension system. I like how transparent it is, because in other games where you do moves like biting time or something like that, allow them to just double, like literally just double your attack power. And it seems like, what's the use? This kind of scales
exponentially.
Not exponentially, but
doubles it every time.
Yeah, it doubles it, and then eventually you go up to like 50. So it's going up a little faster than just doubling, but you can see what it's doing, and you can see why it would be worth waiting, especially since you may want to take time to buff your character. With spells like Oomph, that'll also double your attack power. So there's kind of incentive to queue up some power for your heroes that's just not there in other games.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I don't like about the game's combat is that about maybe half or two-thirds of the way through the game, after you've learned to use tension all the time, the game introduces enemies that dissipate it in one turn.
Yeah.
And it happens often.
It does, especially the boss battles.
Especially boss, and it pisses me off.
But then
I understand why they're doing it. Yeah, I understand why they're doing it, but I wish they'd introduce that mechanic much sooner. So that you could understand that I can't always rely on tension.
I like that it kind of forces you to change things up. You have to learn how to play more defensively towards the start of the battle to really get a handle on the boss's attack patterns and how often you can risk psyching up. So, you know, okay, maybe this boss, I can tell that he casts it about every four turns, or when a certain thing happens in the battle, he'll tend to cast that. So I'll just psych up twice, and I'm going to call that enough.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I never really used the tension system. I feel weird skipping a turn and not getting an attack in. But maybe that's because I haven't been in enough battles that really justify it.
One of the best items in the game to alchemize is the Timbrel of Tension. And if you equip that to somebody like Yangus or Jessica, a character who's not going to do something every turn, if they use that in battle, it increases the tension of everybody in one turn.
Oh, wow.
And Zach, you know, I initially took your advice to put it on Yangus, but because of how I was playing the game, Yangus, it was more efficient for me to give it to the hero. Have Jessica focus on buff spells, have Angelo cast healing spells, and Yangus would psych himself up. So if you had the hero using the Timbrel of Tension, he would psych himself up by one every turn. But Yangus, if you have him psych up and have the hero use the Timbrel, then essentially you can psych up to 20 in one turn.
Right. True. Yeah, it depends on who your powerhouse is, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's true. I mean, and that really made the two fights where it made a big difference for me were Imperia, the bird. That boss fight is hard as hell. And then the Rapthorn, last boss. And having your monster teams was hugely helpful too.
Oh, that's an awesome mechanic. And I think that was in the original game, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, but Andy and Neil, if you guys take the time to go through the monster arena and get some really good teams, and there are some really good enemies you can't find until certain points of the story. But if you do that and you win, you get the ability to call your monster team out kind of as your substitute for a while. And they hammer
them. Typically last like 2, 3, or 4 turns, depending on how powerful they are.
Right.
So the monster hammer that the boss. Is the monster arena that weird circus looking building near Pick'em?
Yep.
Okay.
Maury is amazing.
Maury's great.
Is it the character or when you can have him join your team?
I never had him join my team.
Me neither.
You need to like beat everything in the monster arena to even get him?
I think so.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, he'll join your team as soon as you beat the A rank or the whatever his rank is, beat him in the monster arena. Yeah. And then there are more fights, optional fights after that.
Yeah, they added like a whole new tier, I know.
Yeah.
In the 3DS version. But yeah, I love his writing. And the monster arena is really fun too, although it took me a while before I kind of like figured out. Like, because I was kind of like building up a team before I went and got there, and I could only have 3 people on my team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like beat the first level, and it's just like, you can have another slot on your team. I'm like, oh, damn. Because I kept on like having like, oh, who do I keep? I don't know.
And
if I just went and did a couple, it would have been way easier.
I think I've only found one of the monsters that he pointed me towards, and I don't even really know what the monster arena is as a result, so. Maybe I should take some
time to say,
and look at that.
You really should, Andy. One of my favorite things about Maury's dialogue is that I feel like everything he says is an innuendo, but even though I'm an adult, I don't exactly know what he's insinuating.
But you're just like,
it doesn't sound right, but I'm not quite sure how it is wrong.
And he, if you make your party leader Jessica, he calls her Bimba, which I thought was a little.
That's awful.
Yeah. I like
Moria. There's no getting around that. That's pretty clear. But
well, yeah. I like Moria a lot more than Red. Although I like the relationship between Yangus and Red.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of cute to watch.
So Red's joined your party because isn't it just like that's story based, isn't it?
Yeah. Red being kind of the infamous bandit, I guess. Or
yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Thief, whatever she is, she has her own little place out in the middle of a lake. She employs some goons and she goes and steals treasure.
Yeah.
Yep. She's a pretty good fighter. Oh, go ahead.
One of my least favorite things that in the game is this sequence where you're running through a dungeon and Red is running through it with you in parallel. And like you're racing against her. Like, you know, you want to get to the end of the dungeon first and she's not powerful enough to fight the monsters or smart enough, I guess, to solve the puzzles. and yet every time you unlock a door or like reach some significant milestone, you just let her run by you and go, thanks.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
She runs ahead of you. Like, what are you guys doing? You know, have someone play defense while you're, you know, just hold her head or something.
That's true. And then when she gets to the boss, she's like, well, I can't do anything about this, so.
Yeah, you guys want to handle this? At least she didn't run up and steal the thing you were going after, because that would be really aggravating.
But yeah, and she's a pretty good fighter. I haven't really played with Yangus, but she has some interesting fan based moves, good multi hit attacks, very helpful for killing slimes.
Cool.
Yeah, I never really integrated her into my party just because I really don't like getting a character in the middle of an RPG.
Yeah, I like how early you get your party of four, and like that's your core four.
Yeah, it's true.
To be honest, I would have replaced Jessica with her, though. If I was thinking clearly, I probably would have done that, because I found Jessica to be mostly useless.
But she's a mage. You need a mage.
I guess.
Red is not a mage, I can tell you right now.
No, that's true. But the hero can kind of do a little bit of double duty there.
He can, that's true. That's true. And although I don't think he ever learns Kazing. That's all Angelo.
That's true. But since I invested so heavily in whips for like half the game, it just, I don't know. I know, Zach, you like them, but for me, they certainly don't stack up to the offensive abilities of the other characters.
Oh, that's true. And I mean, no matter what you give her, whether it's staffs or knives or a whip, she's never going to be your power character ever. I mean, her strength is never good. I had to use Seeds of Strength on her just to do any kind of significant damage at all, which is annoying. But I mean, it works out because Hero and Yangus are kind of your powerhouse characters. Angelo is your healer. And it's kind of sad that he doesn't do anything else. But then Jessica's your mage. And I just kind of.
You know what? Angelo's Shining Shot ability is pretty cool.
Oh, that is good.
That does quite a significant amount of damage to all the enemies.
He's got a lot of really good bow attacks.
Abilities. Yeah, he does, yeah.
Multi-shot is decent when you're hunting metal slimes.
Yep. I use that a lot when I was on my metal slime run.
I put almost everything on him towards bows.
Yeah
that's what I did as well.
I got him. I think he has a little down sword, but
he has a really good move at the very top of his charm category that hits every enemy for a really good amount of damage.
And I know in his charm, in his charm skill tree, he has moves that can remove enemies' buffs as well. Yeah. Right? Oh, their tension. Okay.
That is super helpful later on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I love the game. I mean, I sank way too much time into it. And I will say that after you beat the game, you can go to a location kind of up in the clouds where you learn about much more about the hero's backstory. And it's a very rewarding mission, but it's super hard. But it's really
is that cool. What John was talking about on Twitter?
Yeah, he
it
was.
It must have been, because that's really the only
post-game. I saw him saying that his part of the game was post-game.
I'm kind of regretting I sold my copy of the game right after I beat it to kind of put it towards Horizon. But I don't know.
It's
I
a just, good trade.
Yeah, I had just beaten Dragon Quest VII, and then I played Dragon Quest Builders, and then I played Dragon Quest VIII, and God, I love the game, but I had had enough Dragon Quest.
I understand.
I eventually
I was probably,
look it up on YouTube.
I mean,
like I'm hours of Dragon Quest.
I'm not even done the game yet, and I kind of was at a. I mean, well, because I also put like 20, 30 hours into 7 before I played 8 too.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and I put in 105 hours into it. So
because I basically like I stopped where I was in 7 because I got 8. Because I went out and got 7 the day it came out in September, and then didn't start playing it until like Christmas.
Mm. I'll say that Dragon Quest games in general are good for. For me, it was particularly helpful around where all the political turmoil that's been going on. If you just want to zone out, you know.
That's part of the reason why I dove into it as hard as I did. I mean, that came out right around the inauguration, and it really was just like I just would sink into that world. And I remember Zach, like you and I, just texting each other about that, and that like that was my respite from paying attention to the news.
Yep.
In the waning days before Zelda came out, I was trying to find something to play that wouldn't feel like starting a big project right before the launch of another big project. And so I put Dragon Quest Builders back in, which I hadn't actually touched in about a month. And I played it for another 2 to 3 hours. I'm in the middle of the third chapter, and I think I might be getting pretty close to being done with that game. I
petered out right about there.
I loved the first 15 hours of that game, maybe the first 20. And then I just hit a point where everything got a lot harder in the third chapter. And it became a little less leisurely and a little less fun.
It becomes a lot more combat focused.
Yeah. I faded away about midway through chapter 2. And I kind of like it was just such a, it was kind of a gut punch in Dragon Quest Builders where you can. You build up this town, and they're like, "And you got to start over."
Ooh.
And like I
got to say, if they had made it that one chapter but a little bit longer, it would have been perfect.
Yeah, because like that first chapter, and like even like the beginning of chapter two, I was kind of into, and then it just like, yeah, I guess maybe the combat focus is what kind of killed it for me because I loved like exploring and building stuff.
Well, if you could even like go back and revisit your old town, like if it was all part of a connected world where you could just, okay, well now we need your help over here. And then you go over here and maybe you
have to build a new town. Maybe there's a quick travel. Some of
your gear and stuff. But like, if you could just occasionally go back and visit your old friends at your first town, then it would feel like a big connected world instead of four completely separate games, which is what it does feel like.
That's true. And there's really no reason for them to do that either that I can think of.
I think Builders is good, not great. I think there's a lot of cool ideas that they just kind of fall through in the execution.
Yeah.
Guys, I gotta scoot pretty soon.
Well, I think we're just all about right. done here anyway.
Yeah. We moved on to different games, so.
Yeah.
True.
Time will tell if Andy and I both finish Dragon Quest VIII. Maybe in a couple months we'll have... a lost episode.
Well, I don't have a Switch, so I have plenty of time.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm still playing Zelda. I beat Zelda. I'm still playing Zelda.
So why?
But I mean, maybe you know, if you want to hear us old newscast cohorts get back together more often, drop us a line. Is newscast at Nintendo Report still an email address? I think it might just go to Connectivity now.
No, I'm fairly certain it still exists.
Okay. I mean, like, email newscast at Nintendo World Report or Connectivity at Nintendo World Report.
I'll verify that real quick before we get off the call.
But yeah, I mean, just let us know and we'll come back. I mean, maybe we can find another game. Maybe, I mean, I think whenever Oasis comes out, that might be a game that would be ripe. Because I think, I don't know about Zach, but I think Andy, Nathan, and I are all pretty jazzed for Ever Oasis.
I'm excited to see what Grezzo can do because they have impressed on their Zelda port. So
yeah, everything I've heard, Ever-Oasis. I mean, we haven't heard anything about it, but I think it's coming right along. Probably later this year. I wouldn't be surprised if we actually found out about it in the near future. But yeah, thanks for listening to us talk about Dragon Quest VIII. I hope you enjoyed the game. Hope you enjoyed us talking about it. Thank you, Zach.
Andy, thank you, Neil. Nathan.
And I totally just took over hosting from Zach.
Hey, I'll let him know. And yes, that address is still good.
Cool. Nice.
I don't know who it goes to, but it went to me.
No, I got it too.
Very good. All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.